This is Renegade Broadcasting. Everybody, happy Tuesday. what we've been looking at is it's pretty mind-blowing, but it's going to get even worse. There's no question once you look at the evidence. And again, the evidence we've already looked at is enough to clinch the case, but we're just getting warmed up. Once you look at the evidence, it's very obvious what we're seeing here, a fraud from the word go. It's not that things were right from the start and we've just been going downhill ever since. And I fell for that. I used to think that things were better years ago. No question about it. But all they're doing is bringing us to where they had originally intended, to what they set us up for. Not that we started off on the right foot. That can happen. Oh, yeah, you can have a situation where things start out right and the tribe gets in there and frigs them up. But no. They had it frigged up from the start. Frigged up and rigged up. And I used to think, too, that, the founding fathers were profoundly hypocritical. They were such bastions of truth and liberty on the one hand, but on the other hand, they embraced slavery. Oh, no. They weren't hypocritical at all. They always were for slavery, enslaving everybody, actually. Just couldn't do it at the time the way they wanted to. They knew it would take some time. My God, man. The world is always completely different from how we're led to believe it is, isn't it? We wake up one day, we smell the roses and realize, son of a bitch. Unfortunately, most people, though, they never take that, the few that find out they've been lied to at all, they never take it to the full extent. They only go just so far, and then, that's it. Oh, no, that's a sacred cow. I'm not touching that one. Pathetic. To go through life like that, to be so in love with preconceived ideas that you don't want to let them go. Even if you suspect deep down inside they might be wrong, you don't even want to look into it because you might find out they are in fact wrong and I don't want to do that. So you will live a lie. How many people there are that do that? I just don't freaking get it, but how most people work. Anyway, another point I was going to make now, what the hell was it? No matter. Historian and librarian for the Library of Congress, James Billington, wrote in his 1980 book, Fire in the Minds of Men, quote, "So great indeed was the impact of Masonry in the Revolutionary Era that some understanding of the Masonic milieu seems an essential starting point for any serious inquiry into the occult roots of the revolutionary tradition." Yes, indeed. This researcher did his homework. He realized that whose fingerprints were all the hell over this damn thing. Undeniable, uncontestable. A Masonic freaking conspiracy. Yeah, well, Judeo-Masonic. In the April 1940 edition of New Age magazine, which of course is, that was the official publication or journal of the Scottish Rite Freemasonry, we find this interesting statement. It was Masons who brought on the war, the American Revolution. So, if the whole country was established by Masons to bring about world government, is it too much of a stretch to surmise that the Constitution itself is a Masonic fraud? Quite frankly, what other conclusion can you draw? Perhaps we should be emphasizing the con part in the word constitution. But again, don't get me wrong, you know, there are a lot of good things in the Constitution. And we'd be far better off if those principles were being followed today. But there are several flaws that were deliberately written into this document to render all the good stuff null and void. And these things paved the way for tyranny in this country, which is pretty much what we have today, isn't it? Anyway. It also needs to be acknowledged that there were indeed some, you know, sincere patriots that contributed to the Constitution. I got to repeat that. No doubt about it. John Adams, actually. Not John Quincy. John Adams. Seems to have been a pretty decent guy. He didn't like a lot of the shenanigans going on. He was very suspicious of the Federalists for good reason. Patrick Henry is another one. Did not want big government. He's the one, of course, who pushed for the Bill of Rights. Unfortunately, though, these sincere individuals were few in number and their influence was far too minimal. The ones who held sway, guys, were the Masonic frickin' Federalists. They owned all the papers. They disseminated all the propaganda. They held sway. There were too many scoundrels involved with this and too many of their dupes who didn't perceive the manipulations that were taking place, and so that's how they pulled it off. You know, I used to cite, was it Thomas Jefferson's quote where he said, you know, we give you this republic if you can keep it. So I used to always be mindful of that. Yes, we got off on the right track. But old Tom, you know, he was a wise man. He saw into the future. He knew the potential for corruption to take us off the track. Off of what track? Maybe statements like that were made as part of the propaganda so that, you know, people would think that they did have something good. Wouldn't question it. And so later, as things went wrong, they would not see that as the direct outplay of what the Constitution was designed to accomplish. They saw it as straying away from the Constitution. And then all the hype, you know, about the FBI sending out pamphlets to Bureau agents warning them of signs to look for possible indications of terrorism. Those who who carry copies of the Constitution and express extreme loyalties to the Constitution, blah, blah, blah. That tended to instill more in me the idea that, yeah, see, they're against the Constitution. It's all rhetoric, God damn it. It's all bullshit. They want you to think that that document is your savior and to lean full weight on it so that they can eat you alive in the courtroom. How many people have gone into the courtroom with Constitution in hand and walked out victorious simply because they demonstrated that you guys aren't following the Constitution? I fell for that rhetoric. It doesn't work. And why? Because they know it's a goddamn joke. They laugh. Just like they know it's a joke when you quote the Bible at them. Like you think that's going to have some bearing. It's going to bring them around. It's going to touch their heart, their conscience, as if they have one. And, it's going to make them realize the error of their ways. And they're going to want to repent before Jesus. They laugh in your frickin' face because they know it's a goddamn joke. So it is with the Constitution, guys. They want you chasing shadows, building your foundation on the sand. And that's what you're doing when you put faith, trust, and confidence in something that they freaking created themselves. What a joke, isn't it? The parallels with the Bible are striking. I can't stress that enough. You see, the constitutionalists doing with the Constitution the same thing the Bible dupes do with the Bible. They think they have something to stand on. It is horseshit. There's nothing there. You're using a document they created. It's like, building on the protocols, making that your game plan. Oh, they made it their game plan, all right. Anyway, real patriots, like Patrick Henry, as I said, George Mason, the irony, his name was Mason, and a few others saw the Constitution as a blueprint for empire and thus fought against it. They smelled a rat with the thing. They knew something was amiss. The Bill of Rights was added at their insistence as a defense against the Constitution. That's why it was added, to appease them. Okay, yeah, whatever, Bill of Rights, Bill of Rights. But it didn't matter because there were so many loopholes, as I said, built into the Constitution that it made the Bill of Rights null and void. That's why we don't see the Bill of Rights being upheld anymore. They only did for window dressings early on to some degree. But they don't pay attention to it at all anymore because the Constitution, the main body of it, which really overrides the entire Bill of Rights, they're going by that. The irony, guys, we're not in the mess we are because our politicians are ignoring the Constitution. We're in the mess we are because they're freaking following it, as we're going to see. People in favor of a big, powerful central government were traitors like Hamilton, the little tribal puppet banker, who was also in favor, along with the rest of his Federalist buddies, of the First Bank of the United States, the Rothschilds' first major attempt at a central bank in the U.S. Hamilton and company didn't want any enumerated rights. What they were essentially saying was this: you must trust us and our promises to uphold your rights. But Patrick Henry said, not good enough. We need guarantees. In 1976, the sovereign grand commander of the 33rd degree of Scottish Rite Freemasonry, Henry C. Clausen, published a little book called Masons Who Helped Shape Our Nation. On page 82, he wrote, quote, though free, we were not yet united, as of 1783. The loose Articles of Confederation did not provide a strong national government, common currency, or a consistent judicial system. He went on to say, men of vision realized that another step must be taken if the weak Confederation of American States was to become a strong, unified nation. When he says that, guys, what he means is totalitarian power concentrated in Washington. The creation of a powerful, centralized government. That's what he's talking about. He goes on to say, again, Freemasonry set the pattern in ideology and form. Since the Masonic federal system of organization was the only pattern for effective organization operating in each of the original 13 colonies, it was natural that patriotic brethren should turn to the organizational base of the craft for a model. It was natural for them to turn to Freemasonry for a model, he says. Regardless of the other forces that affected the formation of the Constitution during the Constitutional Convention in 1787, the fact remains that the federalism created is identical to the federalism of the Grand Lodge system of Masonic government created in Anderson's Constitutions of 1723. They were modeling it after a Masonic template, ladies and gentlemen. And what does Masonry teach? That most of its members deserve to be deceived. We are a fraternity within a fraternity. That the real meanings of the symbology in Masonry are only made known to a few privileged adepts. The rest are kept in ignorance, says Masonry. That's their form of government. And that is, in fact, as he said, the form of government that we have, isn't it? The masses are kept in ignorance. Only the few privileged adepts know what's really going on. And so it is with religion. Those at the top know it's a goddamn fraud. They pull the shit that they pull without a conscience, because they know that there's no sky fairy up there watching over them that's going to zap them if they're bad little boys and girls. They know that if anything exists, it's a corrupt piece of shit like themselves that will reward them for their corruption. And apparently, there must be, because that's just how the world works, isn't it? You get rewarded for being a corrupt, traitorous piece of shit. And when you do what's right and have a conscience, you get shit kicked in your face. Welcome to planet Earth. Clausen, an attorney, was naturally proud of the Constitution's Supreme Court, which Masonic brother John Marshall, oh yeah, he was a Mason, the first Chief Justice, and the man who revealed the Masons' contempt for us all in his enunciation of judicial review, which meant simply that the Supreme Court was the true power that could override all of Congress with one stroke of the pen and declare at any time any legislation passed unconstitutional if they so deemed. And since the public has been duped into thinking that unconstitutional means bad and constitutional means good, whenever the Supreme Court says unconstitutional, oh, well, that must mean bad. So let's rally behind the Supreme Court. Let's rally behind their judicial review proclamation, because it's unconstitutional what they declared. Oh, they got quite a thing going, haven't they? Constitutional, quote unquote, is whatever they define it to be at any given goddamn moment. So many people have puzzled over, why did the Supreme Court say that's unconstitutional? That's not a, or why did they say that's constitutional? That's not a, it's a freaking game. They're just exercising the totalitarian power given to them by their Masonic brother a century and a half ago. Well, over a century and a half ago, but, through judicial review, they're just exercising their totalitarian power and throwing in that constitutional / unconstitutional bullshit so they can reel in the gullible ass public who thinks that the word constitution, like the Bible, is something sacred. Oh, how many times, guys, I've heard patriots say this, just like Bible dupes say it.
Well, you know, they're the experts, so if they say it's unconstitutional, and since we know the Constitution is has the last word, and it's you know, sound and solid and untouchable,
just like the Bible.
Well, my pastor says, and he knows the Bible a lot better than I, and I know the Bible is not to be questioned, so therefore, blah, 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 blah.
Nobody stops to question their pastor or their Bible. Nobody stops to question their Supreme Court justices or judges or the Constitution itself because of their pre-programming. That's why. The general public may as well have been MK Ultra, ladies and gentlemen. In a lot of ways, it actually is, isn't it? In fact, that was a very important part of MK Ultra, how to condition and control the public through propaganda without even having to use drugs or electrodes in the brain or electroshock therapy, you know, blah, blah, blah. That, you know, a direct outgrowth of that was Project Mockingbird or Operation Mockingbird. CIA's media control propaganda bullshit program. Still in place to this day. But, you know, beginning back in the 50s, 60s, it really whipped into high gear, you know, with the Kennedy assassination. In fact, I think that's what spawned the whole damn thing to begin with. The research had already been done through MK Ultra. Now let's put it into practice. And so there they were sending out memos to, you know, the talking heads in the media with the major papers and networks that, you know, they had established connections with, pretty much all of them. But, you know, sending out script sheets, telling them what to say if people called in or wrote in with certain questions, how to answer them to brush away any doubts or skepticism about the Kennedy assassination. You can see Johnny Carson doing it, guys, on the if you've ever seen clips of the show when he had Jim Garrison on. Carson actually was holding the goddamn script sheet right there in his hand. And every time Garrison made a comment, he's flipping through the pages to see, I forgot now. What am I supposed to say in response to this? Oh, yeah, here it is. Holy shit. One thing they really drilled into his head, he didn't have to look up on his script sheet for that, is when Garrison tried to show pictures of the hobos, in Dealey Plaza that were arrested. He was hoping that somebody watching would recognize them and help him identify them. Carson pushed his hand down.
No, can't show that.
Why not? The American people need to see this. No, it's just we can't allow it. I was told. Holy shit. One obvious reason is because one of those hobos was goddamn E. Howard Hunt, who, by the way, lest any of you have forgotten or unaware of it, E. Howard Hunt, on his deathbed, I interviewed his son years ago. I think it was on Oracle. His son, St. John Hunt, was given a cassette, audio cassette tape, a recording that his father made before he died back in, I don't know what it was, 2007, I think. And he told him, after my death, I want you to share this with the world. The world needs to know what happened. He confessed on the tape that the Kennedy assassination was, in fact, a high-level CIA operation. He admitted it. We don't have to, you know, rely on guesswork anymore. We don't even have to research. It's been admitted by one of the top CIA agents at the time. He participated in it. He didn't fire any shots, he said, but he was there to help, you know, coordinate the whole thing. And sure enough, he's one of the frickin' hobos that was photographed. This is what's so goddamn amazing. You still have dumbasses out there denying this, saying you're a conspiracy nut, when we have admissions like that that have already been made. Just shows how goddamn stupid. But of course, you know, St. John Hunt was never allowed to go mainstream with that. Only those who pay attention to the underground and read are going to find out about stuff like that. It wasn't on Larry King Live or
The O'Reilly Factor.
Anyway, coming back to judicial review, where the hell are the checks and balances on that one, ladies and gentlemen? There's no check and balance on the Supreme Court's declared powers of judicial review. That's got to be one of the biggest, if not the biggest, abominations ever introduced into the American governmental system. Still in place to this day, in spite of all the havoc it's wreaked, all the controversies it's incurred, there it is, still going on every day. It is absolute totalitarian power. Supreme Court judges and justices have the power to decide what they feel is or isn't constitutional. And that decision is final. They override all of Congress. Again, you know, seeing what corrupt piece of shit the whole damn shebang is doesn't really even matter. But still, nevertheless, that's scary. Such a small group of people to have that much power. This situation is especially alarming when we consider that these individuals are appointed, not elected, and they're appointed for life. Again, not that it matters because elections are so easily rigged anyway, but nevertheless, guys, that they can get away with this, that people accept that kind of power when these officials are appointed, they're not even elected by the people, and yet they have authority over the ones that you have elected. Think about that, America. And you think you live in a free society? Are you shitting me? In what sense is it free? Pray tell.
How old are you, Billy?
All right, guys.
26.
Let's break right back.
I'm an entertainment lawyer.
Here's an interesting Masonic quote once again. In a 1987 edition of Education, Volume 107, Number 4, in an article called Freedom, Justice, Equality, and Fraternity are the four cardinal principles of Masonry. Oh, write that one down and remember it. The four cardinal principles of Masonry are freedom, justice, equality, and fraternity. Yes, 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 yes. Anyway, former federal judge, tribe member, and Freemason Jack Levitt wrote this, quote, Freemasons naturally contributed to the conception, compromise, and ratification of the U.S. Constitution. They all insisted upon the federal system of the Masonic Constitution of 1723 being part of the fabric of the U.S. Constitution. There you go, once again, based on a Masonic document, the Masonic Constitution. And the federation established in the civil government, he said, is identical to the federalism of the system of Masonic government created in those Masonic constitutions. How do you like them apples, guys? How many quotes between yesterday and today have we looked at, all saying the same thing, all from authoritative Masonic sources? They're not lying. The whole thing was a Masonic creation. How in the hell can patriots, especially patriots who are supposed to be aware of the abomination of Masonry, the threat that it is, the scam that it is, and yet they still think the Constitution is something good and wholesome? Are you shitting me? The Judeo-Freemasons, of course, ladies and gentlemen, at the highest levels, crave power. And that's exactly what they got with the Seven Articles. They fought the Ten Amendments, the Bill of Rights, right up till December of 1791, even after the Constitution had been established. They were still fighting it, trying to eradicate the Bill of Rights. They didn't want it. By the way, speaking of the First Bank of the United States, in the late 18-teens, several states began to levy a tax on the paper notes issued by any bank doing business within their borders that was not locally chartered. The intent, although pretended to be the raising of state revenue, was really to put the Federal Bank of the United States out of business. This is why, so much effort was undertaken in coming decades, culminating in, of course, the Civil War, to destroy states' rights, to ensure that the federal government had power over the states. That's more than anything what the Civil War was all about. When the bank refused to pay such a tax to the state of Maryland, for example, the issue was taken to the Supreme Court in 1819 as the celebrated case of McCulloch versus Maryland. And guess what happened next, ladies and gentlemen? Chief Justice John Marshall came to the freaking rescue. He carefully tailored its decision to support the federal government's central bank. Its decision, the court's decision, or his decision, I should say. He carefully tailored his decision to make it out to look like it was constitutional, to ensure that the federal or the central bank won the case. Oh, isn't that shocking? Isn't that it? And how, in what sense, is that constitutional? It actually was constitutional, as we'll see. The Constitution is all about concentration of power. Oh, here's a point I wanted to make earlier and I forgot. The Constitution, here's another argument you can't get around. The Constitution was drafted up by powerfully wealthy political power mongers. How in the hell can people think that financially well-endowed power brokers would have any desire whatsoever? And for the most part, entirely, when it comes to the Federalists, they made it clear they didn't have any goddamn concern about individuals' rights. The impression is only given that there was such a concern when you read the Bill of Rights. It seems to, support the idea of individual rights. Again, that was only because of the sincere anti-federalist. But you understand, most Americans think that all the founding fathers had that in common. They all wanted freedom and justice and liberty. Blah, 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 blah. How could you possibly think that? All of these monkeys were powerfully wealthy, well-connected, high society snots. How the hell could you think that they would ever have concern about the Lilliputians, the little people? Jesus Christ, man. And so it is today. The mindless asses that go to the polls and check off the little boxes, how can they think that these assholes whose names they're filling in or checking off could ever possibly ever be concerned about their rights, their freedoms? Are you shitting me? It's all bullshit rhetoric, and it's been bullshit rhetoric from the word go. Yes, the few that pushed for it, like Patrick Henry, the Bill of Rights, you know, he was sincere. But the ones who were responsible for bringing us the Constitution, the Judeo-Masonic pieces of shit, they only allowed it, guys, because they knew they had put enough loopholes in the Constitution so that it really was null and void. It was just window dressing. But they never wanted you to have rights from the word go. They were forced to make some concessions, at least superficially. Yeah, you know, we might have to grant them a few concessions for a few decades or so anyway. Just like when the Federal Reserve Act was passed. The institution that rose immediately out of that was not fully what they wanted. You know, Congressman Vanderlip admitted that. Jacob Schiff admitted that. You know, well, it's not what we want totally, but we can work out the details later. We can at least we got the system in place. You know, we can iron out the details and change it the way we want it later. So it is with the Constitution, guys. It wasn't exactly what they wanted. They fought to get rid of the Bill of Rights. They couldn't do it. But at least it was still their creation. And with all the loopholes they put in it, they knew that over time they could, you know, make the necessary adjustments to bring it to where they wanted it. Anyway, with all that said and done, let's now start breaking down the Constitution and see where the problems lie. Oh, and they're legion. But once again, before we embark on this, let me remind you, look what we have already discovered. Freemasonic fingerprints all over the damn thing. Right there, guys, that's reason to seriously question it and examine it critically, if not scrap the whole thing altogether. In fact, once you examine it critically, that's what you got to do. Well, when I say scrap it all together, I mean write it off as a bunch of horse shit that we've been sold. There's good stuff in there, yeah. But the document as a whole, it's a fraud. Same with the Bible. There's good stuff in there. Not much, but, you know, there's a few good things in there. You got to have some good in with the shit so that it'll be acceptable. So, that you know, you got to have something to convince the masses that it's in fact good. And that's exactly what they do. You know, if you go to church and listen to a sermon, the minister, perhaps without even realizing it, some clearly don't. I didn't when I used to preach. I would continually focus just on the cozy, comfy passages, the ones that, you know, said what you liked. I wasn't doing it on purpose. I wasn't deliberately, you know, pulling things out that I liked to deceive people. You know, but that's just what winds up happening. You ignore all those parts, and oh, there's so many of them. You ignore all those parts that don't jive with your preconceived notions, with your fantasies of what you want the book to stand for. You ignore those parts. You just focus on the cozy, comfy parts, you know. And so that's how it is with the Constitution. People who quote it endearingly are usually just quoting from the Bill of Rights. You know, they're not looking at the articles. They're not focusing on some of those more nefarious parts. But you can't ignore them. That's the bulk of the thing. That's the heart of the thing. once you do that, you realize, oh my God, all these good parts are basically useless now with all this crap in there. And so it is, again, like the Bible guys. Once you step back and look at the bigger picture and see that the overwhelming majority of passages are horse shit, the contradictions are legion, the inconsistencies are through the roof, there's no salvaging the good parts. You might still cling to those good parts, you know, in spirit, but you realize the document is null and void. It can no longer lay claim to the title of the infallible Word of God and be a wholesome document devoid of error and problems. No, you have to completely write it off now as such. You have to recognize it as the product of human hands, very corrupt human hands. And so it is with the Constitution. That's all it is. That's all it is. Some people might say, well, of course, it's going to have mistakes in it. Humans made it up, and humans make mistakes. Oh, no, 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 no. That's the problem. These aren't mistakes. These problems were put in there deliberately. And so it is with the Bible, too. The Bible was written to justify evil under the guise of propagating good. That's the whole message of the Bible. You know, it talks about this God as being loving, but yet it has every conceivable evil under the sun being committed under the auspice of that all-loving, just God. The Bible gives sanction to evil, guys. That's what it does. For example, again, I pointed this out so many times before, Bible dupes cannot answer in the negative if you ask them if baby killing is okay, or you know, if baby killing is forbidden under all circumstances. You know, do you believe that there's no instance where baby killing is acceptable? They can't answer that in the affirmative because they know goddamn well that their loving God commanded baby killing all the time. Look what it does. It actually endorses evil while pretending to propagate good. And that's what the goddamn Constitution does, as we're going to see. Anyway, we got a caller on the line. Welcome to the show, caller.
Yeah, hi, Charles. Just a quick note.
Sure.
If there's any doubt in what you're saying, this is Wayne. If there's any doubt in what people are thinking about what you're saying, just have a look at the graphical, buildings of all around America. And you can see exactly where that is inclined. And also in the, which also coincides with it, is in Matthew 5, around the verse, my eyes are a bit bad here, but it says, let your yes be yes and your no be no.
Yeah.
Anything beyond this, you know, that scripture.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. Yeas be yeas, nays be nays. Yep.
Yeah. And yet, every time we go through a workers' compensation case or any claim against the court system, we've got to swear on the Bible. Yet it says in the Bible itself that we should not swear.
Yeah.
How contradictory is that?
Right. Put your right hand on the Bible.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, don't swear on the Bible. It says don't swear.
Yeah.
Let your yes be yes and your nay be nay.
Yeah.
Yet it, whenever we go to the court system, it says to swear on the Bible. Now, how freaking contradictory is that?
And of course, you know, the joke's on the individual swearing the oath because they don't believe in the damn thing. They know it's a fraud. It's all, just to manipulate the public. That's all. That's all it is.
But anyway, if anyone wants to look it up and see Matthew 5, and it actually says that for them to. But if you probably go against that, I don't know what the consequences will be. But it is still a part of what you're talking about because it all combines in the whole system of how it is so corrupt.
Yeah. Yeah. You just made me think about buildings. Yeah, I mean, anybody who looks at Washington, from the word go, Washington was laid out with Masonic symbolism, up the yin-yang. The streets are laid out with the overlaid compass and square and, The Capitol is surrounded. Look at it, guys. Go on Google Earth. Zoom in on the Capitol building and look at the pattern of pathways, walkways around the Capitol. It's a giant frickin' Bohemian Grove owl, for Christ's sakes. It's unbelievable. This stuff has always, always been there.
Everywhere.
In your face. Everywhere. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that in because it's all over America. If anyone wants to deny it, well, you know, it's in your face. It's all there.
Undeniable. Thanks, buddy.
Okay. Great show, Charles. Bye.
Appreciate it. You bet. Take care. All right, guys. So let's now put the Constitution under the microscope and see if it's worthy of the praises heaped upon it by the so-called truth movement. I hate that term, truth movement, because unfortunately, even though, you know, a lot of them, I'd venture to say most of them are sincere, their use of the word truth very often is just way out of line. A lot of them are Bible dupes. So there you go. Truth? When you start out on a false premise and use that as your foundation, your basis for all your arguments, you're damned before you start. We've got to eradicate from ourselves all of these artificial, these false premises that have been pumped into us from the time we were young. When I say there's nothing sacred in this world, oh boy, I'm not kidding. There really isn't. There's nothing sacred, nothing, you know, that has been offered to us. Nothing sacred about anything that's been handed to us. You want to find something, quote, sacred, you've got to look for it outside the parameters of what have been offered to us, or you have to make something sacred yourself. Write up your own list of principles based on, of course, timeless, tried, tested, and true realities, you know, showing concern for others in all that you do, and in all that you do, not hurting others around you, not taking advantage of them. Those are timeless, tested, true, undeniable, and downright common sense. Not that it's common anymore, but common sense principles. So when I say make up your own list, you know, Bible dupes would say, oh, so now you're the ultimate arbiter of morality. Oh, shut up. Yes, I am. And you should be too. Based on these common principles that man has always upheld, that men that had decency about them have always upheld, without the need of some phony religious book to dictate to them. Your religious book is not moral. And I'm not just talking to Bible believers. I'm talking to Muslims. I'm talking to Hindus. Whatever your religious book is, it's not moral. There's never been a religious book produced that's moral. Only on the surface. It's only moral in the minds of the dupes that follow it. But you start examining it under the microscope and you realize, holy shit, what the hell's moral about this? There's nothing moral here at all. A few passages here and there that, you know, hint at morality. But when you look at the big picture, you step back and put it in the context of everything else in that damn book. No, it's not advocating goddamn morality. Anyway, the United States Constitution was supposedly created to ensure from oppression or from oppressive government controls, such as what, you know, the British government allegedly had, you know, burdened the colonists with, oppressive controls. But as we saw yesterday, that was not true, was it? That was all bullshit, all rhetoric. The Declaration of Independence, complaints, which again, Thomas Paine wrote up, it's all BS. There's no basis to any of it. Their complaints were not legitimate at all. They were just trying to manipulate the public to build a case when there wasn't one against King George. Anyway, the Constitution, unfortunate for our misguided patriotic friends, the Constitution does no such thing. It wasn't created to ensure freedom from oppressive government. It was designed to create oppressive government. In fact, let's notice, for example, what our Judeo-Masonic Constitution says in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17. We'll be citing quite a few clauses from this document, but let's start with this one. The Congress shall have the power to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever. Think about that, ladies and gentlemen. That's a direct verbatim quote from this sacred document of liberty and justice and freedom. It actually says that. So doesn't that make null and void all the claims that patriots have made that the Constitution guarantees our rights and freedoms, and it's against centralization of power, it's against governmental abuse and totalitarianism? Bullshit it is. Bullshit. Everything else you read in that document is a joke when you've got statements like this in there. The Congress shall have the power to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever. That could not be called anything but totalitarianism, ladies and gentlemen. That's all it is. The wording here is almost precisely the same as what is in the Declaration of Independence in reference to King George's alleged tyrannical legislative power, which the Constitution was supposed to steer us away from. Imagine. Remember, the Declaration of Independence was making the claim that King George was a tyrant, right? Exercising totalitarian power over us. But yet they turned around and created the Constitution to grant totalitarian power to Congress. To have power to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever. What a sick joke. So the Constitution is really nothing but, a Judeo-Masonic illusion, like so much else in our modern society. But let's continue on with our discussion of Clause 17. It gets crazier still. After stating that Congress has power to legislate in all cases whatsoever, it says, quote, over such district as may become the seat of the government of the United States, referring to the 10 square miles of Washington, D.C., over such district as may become the seat of government of the United States. Now, again, some constitutionalists would say, see, that just gave them power over Washington, D.C., and, you know, that seems to imply what it's saying here. But don't forget, guys, since the Act of 1871, which turned Washington, D.C., into the centralized control mechanism over the entire country. That legislative power now, by default, extends to the whole country. But you know something? They actually didn't even have to create that Act of 1871. They really didn't, because totalitarian power over the several states was already granted to them in the Constitution anyway. It's just like the 16th Amendment, as ambiguous as it is, and in spite of the mountain of claims that have been made about it, when it doesn't even specify the powers that have been assumed from that amendment. It doesn't matter. The truth is, guys, they didn't need to add that. They didn't. The power to tax the shit out of you was already granted to them anyway, as we'll see later on. Right in the Constitution. Chuck, right, guys, we'll be right back. The law, quote unquote, guys, is a death trap. Don't ever think that you can go into a courtroom and you know, that you have a chance of winning because you have, quote, the law on your side. So many people have been burned in the ass thinking that, and then later scratching their head puzzled over it. I don't understand. I have the law on my side. How did I not win? You don't win because, number one, the whole system is corrupt to begin with. But number two, the, quote, law is a game. It's a goddamn frickin' rigged game. You can't beat the system when they're the ones that wrote the rule book in their favor, not yours. You were led to think it's in your favor, that it grants you rights or guarantees you rights, whatever. It does no such thing. It never did. It was never intended to. I've never presented these notes yet. I put them together a long time ago. I should actually follow this show up with that discussion. You know, on admiralty law, maritime admiralty law. Very interesting. The little games that they play. Your best chance in a courtroom is to play dumb. And when they ask you, do you understand the charges that are being brought against you? You answer no. You never, ever sell yourself out by stating that you understand the law, that you understand the charges. No, I don't. No, sorry. You will put them in a tailspin because everything hinges around your compliance, your agreement. Your agreement, when you answer, you know, are you James John Smith? You know, when you answer yes, you've already hung your neck because the James John Smith that they're reading off of on that sheet is actually not you. It's an artificial corporate created entity under admiralty or maritime law that makes you their property. If you answer no, and they can't get you for perjury because you can say, no, I don't write my name like that in capitals. You can fuck with them because they're fucking with you. You're just fucking back with them and using the system against them that they're trying to use against you. They can't get you for, you know, insubordination or whatever in court. No, you're being honest. I'm telling you guys, a lot of times they kick the whole thing out of court. They throw their arms up because they can't trap you like a rat in the corner. The minute you give in to any of their bullshit, say you understand the charges, understand the law, yes, I'm that person on that piece of paper, you have fucked yourself. Don't do it. But, you know, the entire Constitution is written this way. It's all a trap. Anyway, it's interesting to note that through the 13th Amendment of 1865, Congress only forbade involuntary servitude. Yet, notice how this amendment left the door wide open for voluntary servitude, which is just what we're enslaved to today through trickery. Just look at the income tax, for example. The IRS boasts that we have a voluntary taxpaying system. But is it really? Of course not. Nobody volunteered for this horse shit. But the very fact that you comply with it and don't question it, and America as a whole has been doing this for so long now, they still call it a voluntary system. But you know goddamn well, the minute you try to unvolunteer yourself, you're going to get a frickin' SWAT team at your door. So how voluntary is it, really? But they call it that so that they can claim it's constitutional, because the Constitution does allow for voluntary servitude. If you try to unvolunteer yourself, well, then they'll lock you in jail and play, you know, the legal bullshit game with you. You'll try to pull the Constitution out to defend yourself, but you really can't because the Constitution grants unlimited powers to Congress to tax. Did you know that? We'll look at that later. you could argue to the cows come home against the 16th Amendment. And you'd be right. You know, the amendment wasn't even ratified, and it doesn't even specifically state that Congress has the power to directly tax you. All of that is true. But it doesn't matter because the Constitution does give Congress unlimited power. I'm not talking about the 16th Amendment. It says that elsewhere. We'll look into that later. You don't have any recourse, guys, when it comes to the Constitution. You don't. Your best bet, again, is to not let them entrap you, backing you into a corner, agreeing to their terms, their definitions of words that they use. You know, in doing that, you're telling them, without being insubordinate, that you don't recognize their jurisdiction over you is what you're doing. They can only get you when you consent to their fraudulent, bullshit, word game, pretentious jurisdiction over you. And, you know, I'm not talking about when you actually have broken the law, you know, and you deserve to go to jail. I'm talking about when they're trying to entrap you, they're trying to set you up, and God damn it, most court cases, that's all you're dealing with anymore, isn't it? Hell, real criminals go free, not just in the government, but, you know, people that are well-connected. Look at Henry Lee Lucas. We talked about him a few days ago. He deserved the death penalty, but he got off scot-free because, again, he was well-connected, wasn't he? What a fraudulent system, man. What a goddamn disgusting. And yet so many other people came up for review who didn't really have much evidence against them. They probably didn't even commit the crimes that they were charged with. They went to the chair because they weren't well connected. What a crockery. Anyway, the income tax, of course, along with the IRS that fraudulently collects it, are instruments of absolute slavery, ladies and gentlemen. But as long as they put that voluntary word in there, you have no constitutional protections whatsoever. None. Now, if you challenge them on that in court and say, I'm not volunteering to pay this anymore, well, that's when they'll come with the word games at you, and you're not going to win. You're not going to beat them. And even if you do, like Joe Bannister, former IRS collections officer, who did challenge them and did win. He beat them. Before a grand jury, he proved the income tax is a fraud. But it didn't matter because his life has been a living hell ever since. They've harassed the horse shit out of him. So, we're dealing with a system that's so vulgar, so completely corrupt, and has been from the word go, and we've got a monkey-rigged constitution, guys. It will play out any way they want it, and you really can't beat them citing the Constitution. I'm telling you, don't even bother trying. It's a waste of time. It's a joke. It's a scam. There's other, more effective ways to do it. Don't even bother with that goddamn thing. You have to prove in court. Sometimes that doesn't even matter. It depends how, you know, dumbed down the jury is or how corrupt the judge is. Very often juries don't even have any say anymore anyways. But it can happen, but not through the constitutional argument. It's just not going to work anymore, if it ever did. You have to prove that the government is being unfair, tyrannical, out of control. That's your only hope. And not let them entrap you, like I said, by getting you to consent to their questions and agreeing with their definition of terms, their twisted definition of terms. Again, as I said, it's not a good argument, to argue against the income tax on constitutional grounds. Rather, it should be, or to argue against any other government abuse, it should be confronted on the basis that it's pure tyranny and legalized extortion. That's what it is. Anyway, in regards to Masonry's role in the establishment of the Bank of North America and the first bank of the United States in the late 1700s, the first two attempts at a central bank in this country. Notice what else Henry C. Clausen wrote in his book, Masons Who Helped Shape Our Nation. He said, the nation could either unify as one people or disintegrate into a loose federation of states. It was a critical question, the determination of which would set the pattern for the rest of our history. Once more, Freemasons were in pivotal positions working for a strong United America. Yeah, a strong central government is what he's talking about. Second only to Washington and Franklin in this movement were Robert Morris and Alexander Hamilton, often called the banker of the revolution. Brother Morris, like Hamilton, realized that a national fiscal and economic system was necessary to hold the states together. Oh, are you frickin' kidding me? First steps were made toward this when Morris, who had received a Masonic apron from Washington himself in 1778, was named Superintendent of Finance in 1781, and when the Bank of North America was opened in 1782. Oh, guys, right there from the start, they were trying to set up, just like the Bank of England, this oppressive, monstrous, frickin' noose. Original stockholders, he said, were Franklin, Jefferson. Did you catch that? And this is 1782. This is long before Jefferson made those glaring statements in 1791 denouncing the Bank of the United States, right? First Bank of the United States. He was a primary stockholder in the goddamn thing. Or the Bank of North America is the first one that existed prior to that. The first Bank of the United States was established in 1791, but prior to that, there was what was called the Bank of North America. It was still an early attempt at a central bank. Jefferson was a primary stockholder. Jefferson, Hamilton, he says, Monroe, and Jay. The bank clothed Washington's army and supplied enough confidence in the new nation to win America international recognition. Hamilton, aide-de-camp to Washington in the Revolution, member of the Continental Congress, and first U.S. Secretary of the Treasury, supported Morris, proposed extending the bank into the first bank of the United States, and with Washington's strong support, succeeded in this endeavor to establish America on a second monetary basis. Listen to this, guys. He's saying that this whole thing was a Masonic creation. Of course, just like the goddamn Constitution. No wonder the Constitution doesn't say anything against the establishment of a central bank. They knew the dangers of this. They fully intended to have such a thing established. They actually already did, as the damn thing was being drafted up, or had the early stages of one. He goes on to say, without the combined financial genius of brothers Morris and Hamilton, the delegates to the Constitutional Convention in 1787 may not have had the needed confidence to envision the creation of one binding constitution to govern all the states. On this basis, however, Franklin could argue persuasively that the combined political, military, economic, and social benefits that the Constitution assured Brother Robert Morris, he says, nominated Brother Washington, who was unanimously elected president of the convention. Thus, he gave his tremendous prestige to the constitutional proposal. Of course, he was goddamn fellow Mason, wasn't he? 33rd degree. He goes on to say, the significance of Freemasonry's influence on the Constitution cannot be overstated. Freemasons conceived, argued, and ratified the immortal document, and ever since that historic convention in Independence Hall, Philadelphia, Freemasons have given support to its preservation. They're in love with that document. Shouldn't that frighten the shit out of you, that a document that so many, you know, ignorant, freedom-loving Americans are so in love with, and yet Freemasons love it as well? It's kind of like, you know, so many Bible dupes who love the NIV, and yet the basis of that being the Westcott Court text was praised by Madame Blavatsky. She called it the true text. I mean, who cares? It's all shit. But nevertheless, all the Bible dupes that use the Westcott Hort-based text in the form of the NIV are embracing a Bible that the bitch Madame Blavatsky endorsed. Are you freaking kidding me? The fact that she endorsed it should make you want to take a closer look now, shouldn't it, you dumbasses? Well, so it is, guys, with the Constitution. If Freemasonry endorses it, loves it, wants to preserve it, there absolutely has to be something wrong with it. And I'm talking high-level Freemasonry when I say they endorse it. Understand that the Freemasons, Judeo-Freemasons, needed to have a strong central government to ensure the collection of the debt created by their central bank, and ultimately to wage imperialistic wars abroad to set other to steal, you know, other nations' resources, which is just what they've been doing, and expand world governmental control, which, again, ultimately is where this is all leading. Don't forget, Manly P. Hall said that this country was founded by Masons for a secret august purpose known only to the initiated few. One of the few voices of opposition, or seeming opposition, to this farce, first bank of the United States, was Thomas Jefferson, who said, if the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, which is just what the Federal Reserve System does, first by inflation and then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow around them will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless on the continent that their fathers occupied. The issuing power of money should be taken from the banks and restored to Congress and the people to whom it belongs. Very commendable quote, right? But keep in mind, guys, keep in mind, Thomas Jefferson, you know, I used to think, well, he was one of the decent ones. No. He was one of the primary stockholders in the Bank of North America, the predecessor to the First Bank of the United States, the first attempt at a central bank in this country. How against this type of system was he really? In 1791, he wrote, I place economy among the first and foremost of virtues, and public debt as the greatest of dangers to be feared. To preserve our independence, we must not let our rulers load us with perpetual debt. If we run into such debts, we must be taxed in our meat and in our drink and in our necessities and in our comforts, in our labor and in our amusements. If we can prevent the government from wasting the labor of the people, under the pretense of caring for them. They will be happy. Again, you know, shits and giggles here. 10 cheers for this quote. Very true, very important, but, you know. But, guys, it's bullshit coming from him. It's hypocrisy. As we'll see later on, Mr. Thomas Jefferson was America's first imperial president. Did you know that? Or the first one to really brazenly engage in outright, in-your-face, open imperialism. We'll look into that later. But anyway, this reminds me of, again, the Churchill quote, right? This power was behind the French Revolution, the Russian Revolution. It seeks to control the world, blah, 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 blah. Great quote. Absolutely. Undeniable. Very truthful quote. But he was the biggest whore of this system, wasn't he? And I'm afraid, ladies and gentlemen, we have to say the same thing about Mr. Thomas Jefferson. Blazing hypocrite. In this quote, everything he says is true. It's praiseworthy. The quote is, but not Mr. Jefferson himself. Anyway, so, you know, maybe we can understand now why the American Revolution really happened. It was to lay the groundwork for the establishment of a central government and a central bank. That's why it happened. Under the pretext of standing up against tyranny, they were setting up a tyrannical system. Under the pretext of protesting an all-powerful system that, you know, was inserting itself into every aspect of our lives, which actually it wasn't, but under the pretext of stopping such a system and freeing themselves from the shackles of such a system, they were actually putting those very shackles on the American people without them even realizing it. And to this day, even though that has now happened, they still don't realize it. They still think they're living in a free country because they still fall for the "we the people" in order to establish a blah, 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 blah. They're still falling for the bullshit, which is exactly what they wanted. They wanted you to think that a free country was being set up, a country against totalitarian power, while yet establishing totalitarian power. Beginning immediately from that moment on, from the day that they first signed that document, drafted it up, they began immediately implementing measures to turn this into the very tyrannical system that they claim to have broken away from and been against. Holy shit, man. We haven't fallen away from the ideal of the founding fathers. We've fallen right into the very ideal that they had in mind. The Masonic Masonic ideal that they had in mind from the word go. Don't forget that the recent French Revolution was also staged by our little Judeo-Freemasonic buddies, by the Brotherhood. Along with one of its branches, the Jacobins. And guess what? Not long after this revolution, France had its own central bank established in the year 1800. Oh, my. Have a revolution, get a central bank. How many times has that happened, guys? All during the 19th century, wars were breaking out all across Europe. Perfect cover for establishing a major scam like this. After a war breaks out in this country, that country, the other country, boom, central bank, boom, central bank. How do you think Napoleon funded his war machine, ladies and gentlemen? France's central bank, 1800. Anyway, coming back to the Constitution, let us not fail to take note of what Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18 says. The Congress shall have power to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or office thereof. That's a pretty broad stroke, isn't it? Sounds like totalitarianism once again, doesn't it? And to further buttress that point, check this out. In a 1938 U.S. Supreme Court case, the Erie Railroad Company versus Tompkins, the court officially declared that there is no common law at the federal level in the United States. Its exact wording was as follows. There is no general federal common law, says the court document. So there you go. That would, of course, include the Constitution. There is no federal common law. That includes the Constitution. Regardless what the Constitution says or what we think it says, the federal government believes or knows otherwise. Just look at what Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3 says. Congress has the power to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states. I used to think that all these regulations we see, which do nothing but constipate the economy and business and growth and, you know, for the little guys anyway. Oh, it protects the monopolies of the big corporations so they can destroy everything in their path and, you know, create massive monstrosities of monopolies that crush out competition. But for everybody else, these regulations crush the shit out of everything, right? And I used to think, you know, that these measures, these regulations were unconstitutional. Oh, God damn it. No, they're not. Congress has the power to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states. Well, that ends it right there. All these bullshit regulations, you know, OSHA and on it goes. They're totally constitutional, ladies and gentlemen. They are. They are. The Constitution rolled the red carpet out for these oppressive, choking, scam regulations that have been passed over the years. Totally constitutional. Chuck Gray, guys, be right back. All right, guys, welcome back. Yeah, unfortunately, guys, they lied to us about this one, too. The Constitution is, in fact, a fraud. It has not protected us from civil or foreign wars, inflation, oppressive taxation, or federal corruption. It is, in fact, the engine of all of these crimes, authorizing such racketeering as the private Federal Reserve Corporation and its collection agency, the IRS. They are constitutional, ladies and gentlemen. The foundation for this was laid down in the same year that the Federal Reserve was established, 1913, through the addition of the fraudulent 16th Amendment, the so-called income tax amendment. The Bill of Rights was our great champion for many years, but it too has basically collapsed because it's in conflict with the first seven articles of the U.S. Constitution, guys, as intended. The Constitution majorly contradicts itself. The Bill of Rights literally flies in the face of the articles of the Constitution, which gives totalitarian power to Washington, period. Seeing that deliberate flaws were included in the Constitution from the very beginning, it shouldn't surprise us that the entire Bill of Rights is now under attack and is being misused to justify all sorts of shenanigans and making a mockery of us especially those who think that they have some standing with the Constitution, that think that it means something. Again, guys, they laugh. They laugh. They want you to use that document. They want you to, you know, build your foundation on it. The First Amendment, for example, has become a license for this corrupt system of ours. You know, to wreak havoc. They're using the First Amendment, which, you know, supposedly is there to give us the right to speak out against, you know, government corruption, for example, right? But look how they use it to justify, you know, the immoral filth that we see coming out of Hollywood, for example. They call that freedom of speech, and that, you know, they hide behind that banner so that if anybody complains, parents complain of content in kids' shows or whatever, you know, well, you know, the First Amendment gives us the right to free speech. And, but yet, if you try to use it for a good purpose, for a wholesome purpose, then they'll come down on you. You see how the Constitution is used for, you know, only for things that are detrimental to society, not beneficial. And, you know, a lot of patriots would argue, oh, that's just because they're perverting it, they're twisting it. No, no, they're not. They're using it the way it was intended to be used. It's like the Bible. The Bible is written so loosely that you can, and indeed people do all the time, interpret it a million and one different ways. There's something in there for everybody. If you are actually a morally endowed person, yeah, yeah, we allow some of that crap to slip in there, you know, just so it would look appealing. And yeah, there's some moral stuff in there. As a whole, it's an incredibly immoral book. But again, yeah, there's some moral stuff in there. And if it makes you happy, okay, fine, yeah. So it is with the Constitution, guys. There's a few things in there. Yeah, yeah, they had to allow it in there so it would be accepted. But so much garbage is in there as well. So when they quote the Constitution to support their right to propagate filth on society, they're right, guys. They're right. The Constitution doesn't elaborate on what's acceptable, proper, you know, speech. It doesn't discriminate between wholesome, beneficial freedom of speech and speech that speaks against evil crimes and corruption, and speech that can degrade and demoralize society. It doesn't do that on purpose. Some say, oh, that's one of its flaws. It didn't elaborate. No, no, no. It wasn't intended to elaborate, God damn it. It left the door wide open for abuses like this. On purpose, God damn it. Look who wrote it. Haven't we just been reading all these frickin' Masonic quotes, guys? Look who wrote it. It was written that way on purpose. So, yeah, all the immorality that that we're seeing in movies, on TV shows, it's totally constitutional. Totally constitutional. When they claim their right of the First Amendment, no, that's not abuse. It's not. The Constitution doesn't state what kind of speech is acceptable. It doesn't elaborate at all. And that, you know, that's why you get all these debates going on, trying to go back to original intent. I'll tell you what the original intent was. Absolute tyranny and mayhem. That was the original intent. That's why you see all these debates. They were very obscure, the way they worded it, on purpose, so that anything you want, or anything they want, I should say, could be deemed constitutional. As far as the establishment and free exercise clauses go, who do you think wanted that included? Some have argued that Protestant Christians wanted this to ensure that the Catholic Church would never repeat here what was done in medieval Europe with its persecutions of those that didn't agree with every one of its tyrannical totalitarian dictates. That's not why it was included. The truth is, by this time, the Inquisition was essentially already over. The only one still suffering from religious persecution across Europe, ladies and gentlemen, was the tribe. They wanted to be free to practice their phony-ass religion here, which is just what wound up happening.
Freedom and justice and liberty for all.
All meant them. They still didn't have many freedoms in Europe. They wanted to ensure that they would have them here. And then notice what happened in the following century. All the wars that kept breaking out in Europe. What happened in the wake of those wars? I covered this a while back. I showed how every time a revolution, a civil war broke out in Europe in the 19th century, immediately following was Jewish emancipation. And that's what the Constitution was all about. Their emancipation. These freedom of religion clauses were for them, ladies and gentlemen. Who drafted it up? Judeo-Freemasonry. I rest my case. Anyway. Virginia had written this same Masonic thinking into its Bill of Rights in 1776. Section 16 of that Masonic-inspired document stated, quote, that religion or the duty which we owe to our Creator, again, that's a very generic term, isn't it? Creator. Where did we see that before? Thomas Paine used it, didn't he? Did he mean
Yahweh?
Well, yeah, actually he did. But not the Yahweh that Bible dupes think exists. The loving God. No, no, he meant the tyrannical bitch. The real God that it is. But he was referring to Yahweh under the name of the great architect of Freemasonry. Anyway, here's how the Virginia Constitution read. That religion on the duty which we owe to our Creator, religion or the duty that we owe to our Creator, and the manner of discharging it can be directed only by reason and conviction, not by force or violence, and therefore all men are equally entitled to the free exercise of religion according to the dictates of conscience, and that it is the duty of all to practice Christian forbearance, love, charity toward each other. What that means is you Christians need to have charity and forbearance to us tribe members so we can freely practice our religion and rape and pillage you according to our Talmud without you being able to do anything about it. The San Mateo Masonic Lodge.com website openly acknowledges the Masonic origin of this document. Notice what Karl Marx had to say about separation of church and state, guys, and the tribe factor. He said, only in the North American states does the Jewish question lose its theological significance and become a reality, become a really secular question. Only where the political state exists in its complete developed form, as in the United States with its separation of church and state, can the relation of the Jew show itself in its specific character, in its purity. Karl Marx wrote that, ladies and gentlemen. He's acknowledging here, tongue-in-cheek fashion, but he's acknowledging here that this whole damn thing was created for them.
Only in the U.S. have they found their true freedom, at that point, anyway.
Don't forget, this was before the communist revolutions of 1848. I'm going to be covering that. I've made reference to that numerous times before. but never did get around yet to broadcasting that show. We're going to be looking at the revolutions of 1848. And then we're going to look at another series of communist revolutions that occurred decades later in the 19-teens, not just the Russian Revolution. Did you know that there were communist revolutions all over Europe following the Bolshevik Revolution? And it was the Bolsheviks behind it all, ladies and gentlemen. We know who they were. This was a second attempt to try to introduce communist dictatorships all over Europe. The first one, 1848. Oh, the patterns that emerge once we understand who the string pullers are, how very interesting history becomes. It comes to life. And we can finally start making sense of it all. Anyway, the U.S. government has traditionally stood against the power of the church and the power of monarchs in classic Masonic fashion. And even though, again, this sounds so nice, it's nothing more than the goal, once again, of Judeo-Freemasonry, not to free the masses from tyranny, the kingly or priestly bloodline. No. Simply to put them under their own tyranny, to strip the power of the priestly and royal bloodlines and replace them with the global Masonic banking system or the third Jewish faction. That's all the U.S. has been about, ladies and gentlemen. That's all that your constitutional freedoms are about. Yes, they denounce the abuses of the monarchs in the past. Yes, they denounce the abuses of the church in the past. But what have we gotten in its place? Abuses of the Masonic banking system. That's all we've gotten in its place.
Judeo-Masonic banking system.
Still the same tribe behind the scenes, pulling the strings, engaging in their criminal activities, but from a different angle. That's all it is. Anyway, the Second Amendment is on its way out through gun permit requirements and registration laws. And, of course, the assault weapons ban proposal, the Brady Bill, et cetera, et cetera. And with all of these fake shootings, guys, that's a big part of it. It hasn't been quite so easy for them to get around that one. They're regretting having allowed that to go through. But they've been slowly, insidiously, and unfortunately, highly effectively getting around that, haven't they? They're conditioning the public. And that's why so many of these fake shootings are being staged constantly, to instill fear in Americans of guns, to get them to think that guns are the problem. Notice, that's always the only solution they ever propose, as if that's the only way to solve a problem like that, if in fact the problem was real. Gotta take the guns away. That's the only way. Really? And taking guns away from who? From criminals? No. They're taking guns away from law-abiding citizens, the very ones who need their guns to protect them from these alleged crazy psychopaths. The police aren't doing it, for the most part. You call the police today, what do you get, guys? You call the emergency number, not just your local police department, even 911. I only called 911 once. There was an accident down the street. Did you ever call 911? You know what you get? Please hold. Someone will be with you. You get a fucking answering machine. Holy shit. And then you got to press, this and that and the other key to finally get to the... Well, by the time you fucking do that, you've been raped or murdered or your house has been emptied out or... Holy Jesus Christ. Pretty soon you're going to call 911 and you're going to get Mr.
Mogushi from Bangladesh. Please, can I help you? Oh, okay. Well, hold on. I have to call the ambulance that is nearby you. Just give me a minute. I have to look it up. I handle the whole world, so I have to look up. You said you're in the United States? Okay, okay. I have to get that book. It's over here. Now, what state are you in? Okay, I have to open up to that section. Ah, here we go. Okay, now what town?
We're not too far away from that, guys. We might as well be forwarded to India. I mean, the fact that you get frickin' run through an automated system, you don't even talk to a person, and this is supposed to be an emergency. What a sick fucking joke. This is the system you're supposed to depend on in an emergency while they're taking your guns away.
Oh, don't worry. You don't need your guns. We're going to protect you.
Oh, try calling 911 and see how they're going to protect you, guys. See how that works. America, you have got to be, collectively, you know, most of you, the most dumbest fucking mindless asses this world has ever produced. To accept this kind of horse shit, are you freaking kidding me? Let me stress again, guys. All these fake shootings, it's all about disarming you, the law-abiding citizens. Criminals are not going to be affected by all the anti-gun legislation they pass. They can outlaw guns. It's not going to fucking matter, is it? How is that going to make one freaking peasley-ass bit of difference
with criminals using guns to commit crimes?
It's not going to make a goddamn bit of fucking difference, is it? All it's going to do is prevent you as a law-abiding citizen from getting a gun. It will not, nor could it ever, prevent criminals from getting guns. Drugs have been illegal for a long time, haven't they? Does that stop the druggies on the street from getting drugs? Well, of course not, because the CIA brings them in. But it doesn't matter, guys. They get them anyway. They don't abide by the law, you fucking mindless, stupid son of a bitches in this country that fall for this obvious monkey-rigged horse shit. Anyway, the Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendments have been ripped up by the Patriot Act and the U.S. Army's and the CIA's atrocities at Camp X-Ray and other similar facilities. So forget those. These things only exist in the minds of ignorant fools that believe the rhetorical bullshit. They don't exist in reality, guys. And they never were intended to. The Seventh Amendment supposedly guarantees a jury for virtually any dispute over $20, but just try bringing that up with a judge in traffic court these days. The Eighth Amendment prohibits excessive bail and cruel and unusual punishment, but has the Supreme Court, or any federal court for that matter, protected us against jeopardy assessments and seizures? Asset forfeitures, eminent domain, which steal our money before trial so that we can't even hire an attorney, can't even afford to, if we have any money enough to afford such proceedings to begin with. That's another way they've screwed you out of a right to a fair trial. You can't even afford legal proceedings, can you? And what does the Supreme Court say about having foreign police torture us? It says that it's okay. Just as it says it's okay to use a taser on us. The Ninth and Tenth Amendments are not even recognized by federal judges, who are mostly frickin' Freemasons and or elite tribe members. Everything in the Bill of Rights, ladies and gentlemen, was pretty much nullified by the 14th Amendment, rammed through in the dictatorial aftermath of the Civil War, when the southern states had no true legislatures. The 14th Amendment made us all slaves and said that the public debt shall not be questioned. The key, once again, is that they made us voluntary slaves. We've been in the malevolent, deceptive hands of Judeo-Freemasons from the very beginning of this country, guys. So no wonder things have turned out the way that they have. It was always the intent. They've had us waving their flag and praising their fraudulent constitution all these bloody years, while they steadily chipped away at the Bill of Rights, so that today, again, it's virtually nullified. It's clear that its only intent was window dressing. The Constitution, once again, was a dirty trick crafted in secrecy by delegates who met to modify the existing Articles of Confederation. This is why every federal police agency targets groups that seek either restoration of liberty or independence from our corrupt central government. The FBI in particular, often along with the BATF, has infiltrated, corrupted, and outright destroyed patriot movements, militia movements, and all other independently minded organizations, labeling them as terrorists in the media, beginning with their COINTELPRO operation and continuing until this day. There's to be no room for intolerance of federal abuses. You're to bow and acquiesce, because that's the way it was always intended. They go after patriot groups that believe in the Constitution because they have the wrong perception of it, you see. You know, just like Bible dupes. You're accepted if you go along with ecumenism and, oh, yes, let's all unite as one. If you're an independent-minded person, now you're a troublemaker. And that's another reason why they went after the Waco cult. They were very independent-minded. And, of course, Koresh, in spite of all his corrupt BS, you know, he was speaking out against government corruption. That's not to be allowed. Only the religions that play politically correct smoothie games are allowed to continue. They won't get harassed. Most churches, guys, if you ever had the compunction to want to go to one of their services just to see the bullshit, you'll hear from the pulpit praise of the government. They'll go along with all the official bullshit stories, the 9/11s, the Sandy Hooks, you know, on and on. Whether they know it's true or not, a bullshit or not, it doesn't matter. Whether they really believe it's true or whether they know it's a lie, they have to do it, and they will do it. I told a story before about, you know, when I was going to college, a religious father. They were, they yelled at a friend of mine who had somebody come and speak about the New World Order. She gave a great talk exposing the New World Order. He was called in and disciplined for it and told never to do that again. You know, anyone you pick to speak now, we want to know ahead of time what the topic is. Can you imagine? They don't allow speaking against the New World Order. This is the game that the church is playing. All right, guys, have a great day. Pick up the tomorrow. Take care.